Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, it is St. Patrick's Day weekend and I'm joined by three people who are incredibly passionate about both Ireland and spring. Folklorist Aideen Hearney of Blathana Fianna Wildflower Walks joins us from the island of Inishman. St. Patrick, of course, was a shepherd and we have his modern day equivalent, sadly without a metre and staff here in studio with me this morning in the form of sheep farmer and writer John Connell from Longford. You're very welcome. And also joining us from Fota in Cork is ornithologist, author and broadcaster Sean Ronan, who is on the line. A Céad Míle Fáilte to each and every one of you.
Céad Míle Fáilte.
Fermagat. St. Patrick's weekend. I know that all of you are spend a lot of time outdoors on the land and you probably notice all of the changes that are happening with that thankful piece of daylight now that we're getting and all the plants and animals. And I'm going to get to that very soon. But I want to ask you first of all about this weekend. And Aideen, I'm going to start with you because I think Inishman celebrates St. Patrick's Day in its very own unique way.
Very unique way, and I mean it's one of the biggest weekends of the year, if not one of the biggest days of the whole year in Inishmeon. St. Patrick is a really important figure in Inishmeon. You can even tell it if you come here. Most of the men you meet are called Pádraic in honour of St. Patrick, and then this special day of the year in Inishmeon they play a game called Cead. So it's not like Cad,
it's only the men
the
that
Irish.
Play it.
It's only the men who play it, and they only play it on St. Patrick's Day, and it only happens in Inishmeon. So all the men with a connection to the island flock back for this special day to give it a go and maybe take the trophy home with them.
And what does Cead involve?
So it's a very simple sort of almost prehistoric game in a way. They think it's a lot older even than hurling. And you see kind of games like it even in places like India and all over the world. It's very, very simple. You have a batha, sort of a long kind of a small plank made out of wood. And then you have the cead. So a cead is a small kind of cylindrical piece of wood, maybe about 4 inches long. And with one hand, they have to flick the cead up off the ground. And while it's in the air, hit it again, maybe 30 or 40 feet down the field over a rope. And that's how you get points. And there's teams and captains and democracy. And it's a great day out in the open air.
The islands haven't been hit by the shortage of priests, but will there be mass on the island?
There will, but we are very, very lucky. We have a lovely priest in Tahir Mórtín that services all three of the Aran Islands. So it's going to be a busy weekend for him island hopping. But we have the Inishmeon Mass here on Sunday. So the local choir is getting ready for that. And we've been crocheting little shamrocks for Cancer Care West as well that we'll be selling over the weekend. So it's a kind of a lovely cultural and community weekend for the people of Inishmeon.
You're a folklorist as well, Aideen. And I'm just wondering, there is this now debate, was it St. Patrick or some other phenomenon that actually drove the snakes from Ireland?
Well, I love all of these stories. I mean, you can go anywhere in Ireland, you might hear something sort of different. But one that I heard that I always kind of remember at this time of year, we love looking around what's in nature. One of the things that's growing is hazel. And one of the stories about the hazel is that St. Patrick's batha, his actual stick that he had for walking, was a hazel rod. And they do say that snakes apparently are deathly afraid of hazel for one reason or another. So maybe that was the secret to driving the snakes out.
There we go. And not the man himself. John, you emcee the St. Patrick's Day parade in Ballymahon each year.
Has it
changed now with the arrival of Centre Parks? Is there sort of a new sort of a rush to the parade?
Oh, look, I'm doing it the last 3 years. Ballymahon, I'm not a native of Ballymahon. It's in the south of the county. But it's full of people, full of floats. Centre Parks has obviously changed Ballymahon and wider Longford. It's a huge asset to us, and it's something that everyone now knows and goes to. And, I think the last 3 years have been wonderful getting to see. I missed 1 year. My son was born so about 2 weeks before. So, but it's a lovely day. Trying to gather up all the floats and get all the names right is its own little challenge. But it's a great day. And, it's lovely to see parades in towns around the country, because we see it in Dublin, of course, that's the big one, but St. Patrick's Day is a local celebration. It's a personal celebration. It's something that we can all connect to.
And the whole community comes together.
I was listening to the radio there and someone was talking about Mehl, but sure, it's a Mehl of the spirit. You know, we're all coming together for that day.
When you lived abroad, I know you lived abroad for quite a number of years before coming back to Longford to farm. Did you kind of feel an obligation to kind of Irishize yourself or sort of Irish up when you were away, or how did that feel when you were away from home?
Yeah, those were really important days. I used to work for the ABC in Australia, which is the national broadcaster. And Australia, usually they celebrate Paddy's Day on a weekend, not on the day itself. So I often found myself working on that day. But I remember one St. Patrick's Day in particular, I went and bought ribbon, green, white and gold, and made the flag and a bonnet and wore it into the office.
A self-made flag.
It was a little like a bit of bunting. And of course, everyone asked me, well, what's that about? I said, that's our flag. I said, this is our day. And, you know, I remember one time actually being in Australia with some Aboriginal friends, and a huge community of them have Irish blood. So I had a good friend, Darren Ballingarry, an Aboriginal man with an Irish name, and he used to say, well, today I'm Irish. I'm Aboriginal every other day, but today I'm Irish. And there was, I suppose, when one is overseas, there is a sense of, on that day, the gap of being away from home and with family. We try and bridge it. And it's not about going to the pub, it's about celebrating what is great about this country. And we're an immigrant nation, we're everywhere, you know. And I know this year our TDs are all over the world in a huge outgoing from the island. But I remember one day in particular in Toronto, being looking down from the apartment building at the parade, and I thought, yeah, it's a good little country. We're everywhere.
Yeah. So even the little gimmicky things matter a lot. I want to talk, because we are, thankfully, it is brighter. The mornings are brighter. The clocks are going to go forward now in a couple of weeks. Aideen, way out there in the West, are you noticing that, the stretch and people's moods lifting?
Oh my God, it's completely infectious. It's total giddiness, actually. Just the last couple of days, we finally had a bit of sunshine. And, you know, it was a particularly kind of cold, wet, windy winter. And when you live on a rocky island, like in the middle of the Atlantic, that does take its toll. So having the stretch in the evening now, you really see people out on the roads. The lambs are being born, you know, the primroses are coming up, and everyone's out and they're enjoying it. And of course, because we're so far west, we even get that little bit extra sunlight in the evening compared to the east of the country. And you know what? We've earned it. We've earned it
and every little bit matters. Sean, something that is definitely getting to us earlier is the bird song. There's definitely been a big awakening. Do you kind of feel a big awakening just for yourself at this time of the year?
Oh yeah, absolutely. This is my favourite time of year. I always look forward to it, because although birds, they do give short calls during the winter, they hold off on actually singing until around mid-February, typically. I've been away for a while, but I was out yesterday for a walk in the woods, and it was brilliant to hear some of the old characters back for the first time this year. Dunnock, chaffinches singing, chiff-chaff singing. So although a small number of chiffchaffs now overwinter in Ireland, the majority of them overwinter in the southern Mediterranean and North Africa. And then they come back here around now and they start to sing. They have this wonderful onomatopoeic song. So they're named after their song, chiffchaff.
But let me see, because I think we might even have a little bit to it. Here they are. And it is absolutely beautiful. And I think that's actually your own recording of it, Sean. Can I ask you, what is happening at this time of the year? Why are the singing? Why has the whole activity ramped up? What is happening in those exchanges?
Yeah, so this is a very important time of the year for birds. So they're awakening in a sense. So when they're singing, there's two primary reasons behind this. One is to proclaim a territory. If they're young birds, they might be setting up a new territory. If they're older birds, they're, you know, they're re-establishing the territory that they've maintained from the previous year. And secondly, they do this to attract a mate, essentially. So, you know, birds can hear much more detail in the song than we hear. And birds with a, you know, a more refined or even complex song are more attractive to females. So they're doing their best to woo them into the territory.
Yeah, and it is such beautiful sounds. They're also obviously gathering lots of twigs. So they're nest building as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're nest building. Many birds will be on the nest. And many birds will have been nest building, you know, since much earlier on in the year. Long-tailed tit, for example. It's a lovely, as the name suggests, it's a long-tailed bird with this beautiful white and pink head and breast. But they build a very complex nest out of lichen and spider web. It's a work of art. And they'll start that in February. But then there's many birds that they use generational nests. For example, our eagles, which are now back, white-tailed eagles, they have generational stick nests. And they can be really quite impressive.
So they're not building them from scratch. This could actually, over years, that they're building.
Mean, the majority of birds will build a new nest every year to avoid parasites, essentially, and to avoid predator detection. But some species, herons included, and eagles, will, yeah, so they'll reuse the nest for many years. So in America, actually, there's a close relative called bald eagle, and the oldest nest recorded there was 34 years old. It was 9.5 foot deep, and it was about 12 foot in diameter, and it weighs 2 metric tons. So white-tailed eagle is capable of the same.
Wow, so intricate. And from baby birds, John, to baby lambs. I think it is one of the things we definitely associate with spring when we see them sort of just prancing around, and it really sort of elevates the mood. Have you finished your lambing yet?
We finished on Sunday last week. We had a busy month. You know, I was thinking, of course, it's Paddy's Day. St. Patrick was with Milku with sheep. So I don't have a staff, but you have a crozier to pull lambs in. This is a beautiful time of year on a farm. Not just is the deep journey being done in relation to calving, which is happening as well, but lambing, it's just a certain kind of magic. Now, it'd tire the hell out of you. You'd be up at all hours.
It's a permanent labour ward, isn't it?
It's a permanent labour ward. It's the maternity ward, as we call it. And, you know, Dad and myself and Mam, we were on shifts throughout the month. But it was a lovely occasion. You know, the thing about a lamb is a lamb wants nothing more than to be a lamb. It isn't when it's born thinking, geez, maybe I should have been a shepherd, or maybe I should have been an accountant. They're very happy in their own skin. And I think it's that infectiousness and the present moment that they're in that brings you into that. And I suppose that's why I wrote 12 Sheep, the book, because it was this beautiful journey with them. And you learn, you know, that book was about learning lessons, but you learn lessons every lambing season. You'll learn about life, and in a sense you'll learn about yourself. And then the great joy is we let them out in stages as the lambs got a bit bigger over the month.
Do you be panicking about them, the wee tiny little things heading
out?
Yeah,
but you know, a lamb grows quick. A lamb grows quick, and they're out at the moment, bar one that's just in getting a bit of monitoring. It's as soon as they get out, they're just prancing around the place and jumping around the place. And there's something really sort of, it makes you feel good, you know. And, you know, on that month long, some people could be in a 2 month lambing season on big farms. You're on a sort of a safari into yourself and into the land and into the sheep. But I think you come out of it having learned so much about life. And if you're lucky, a little bit about yourself.
Indeed. Aideen, you had something of an unexpected arrival. There's a newborn on the island.
There is a newborn on the island, the most doughtiest little, not even a week old baby donkey. We're calling him Pádraig O'Connor because there's a famous story in Irish on Thistlebug Dubh, the little black donkey. And so he's been here in our back garden cutting the grass for us with his mammy Gusto for the last few days.
And
it's
did you know,
joy to behold.
You obviously didn't know that the mother was expectant.
Well, I didn't, because I just asked my neighbour for the loan of a donkey for purely biodiversity purposes. You know, it's really good to graze the land traditionally rather than pulling out the lawnmower. You get a lot more wildflowers if you can get a grazing animal in on the land. So I was trying to do my bit, you know, for the environment. Got the loan of the donkey. I did think she was a little round, but didn't think too much of it, you know, because like that, I'm not an expert. So I went away for a few days and came back. And here we go, a little baby waiting for me when I came back. Birthed herself, no trouble to her.
And listen, that's wonderful. Sean, you're actually a trained ecologist, amongst other things. And like Anna, you probably see an awful lot that's happening with the wildflowers and the flora and fauna. What else is happening at the minute?
Yeah, so everything is bursting to life, really. So again, I was taking everything in on my walk yesterday in the local wood, and it was just brilliant to see the first flowers coming up from the ground there. So Lesser Celandine is a great one to look out for at this time of year in the woodlands and other places. It's got this lovely dark and light mottled colour to the leaves, green colour to the leaves, and these amazing bright yellow flowers. And in the same wood, there was also wood anemone, which is it's an indicator that the woodland has been there undisturbed for a long time. So, yeah, everything is just really, really bursting into life. The first migrants are returning now. So as well as the chiffchaff, we'll start to get sand martins, which are very close relatives of swallow. So they're the first of that family to return. So you'll see them, typically actually, amongst birders, St. Patrick's Day is a day that people go out to look for the first arrivals. So it's often a day where the first sand martins and the first wheat ears return from Africa.
And for you, Sean, look, I mean, just John was just kind of just talking about that, the lessons you learn from lambing and farming. But this time of the year, what do you think it does to us as humans? You know, that whole, suppose we've been wintering as well. Do you think it brings us back to life, this whole change in nature and what we see and what we hear?
You know, every day we step outside that door, we step into a world of beauty, of magic. It's you know, it's amazing. It's all around us, and it doesn't cost us anything. But spring in particular, everything really, you know, it goes up a notch. There's so much to hear and see. But one thing that I think that people should know is that it's a critical time of year for breeding birds. And it's illegal to cut hedgerows or trees between the 1st of March and the 31st of August.
Now, yeah, that's our annual ban on hedge cutting. And remind us just, what is the purpose of that?
So, because of the fact that we have, you know, very little woodland cover in Ireland, the lowest in Europe, these hedgerows are now lifelines for birds. They're building their nests there. So if we cut those hedges when they're nesting, if we don't directly destroy the nest of the young, you will cause the adults to abandon. So it's, you know, it's critical that we leave these hedgerows alone and give our birds a chance. There are some exemptions for the ordinary course of agriculture, construction of roads and buildings, road maintenance. But I think that these exemptions are largely abused in Ireland. And I think it's very important that we question when we see hedge cutting taking place in this country. I think there were only 13 prosecutions last year, but I would say hundreds of breaches. So we need our government to take this more seriously, and we need people to take this more seriously and to understand that this is in place.
And to be more mindful of it. Sometimes, Sean, we think we're being more mindful when we're putting out bird boxes or feeders or bird baths, and you know, we think we're being helpful. Are they more of a help than a hindrance? Are we helping them, the birds, during breeding season if we're putting out those boxes or feeders?
I mean, I don't think you're hindering them in a sense, but I think that there's a better way to do this. What birds need and what everything needs is you know, wild spaces. You know, nature that's not tampered with. And I think if we're lucky enough to have our own spaces, our own gardens, we have a real responsibility to respect the nature that uses these spaces too. And if we were to allow native plants or native trees to occupy those spaces, there would be natural crevices, there would be natural food, there would be a natural sorts of insects and seed. And this is much, much more beneficial to birds and many other species than, you know, providing nest boxes or bird food. So I don't have a large garden. I just have a small little border around a terrace. And we left to grow wild last year to see what would happen. And it was just bursting with life. One of the best flowers that grew there was great willow herb, which grew, you know, about the same height as me, over 6 foot. And there was a constant burst of flowers and seed on rotation throughout the summer. So the flowers kept the pollinators going, and the seed attracted goldfinches, bullfinches, linnets, redpoll, all kinds of things. So allowing nature to have its space is always the best option.
Yeah, and sometimes the easiest is the best. Aidan, can I just ask you, I know your public tours are going to be starting next month and people will be able to go on your wildflower tours. What about your spuds? Is St. Patrick's also associated with the time that you're meant to sow them? Are you planting any spuds this year?
I am. I'm the very proud female representative of the Inishmeon allotment. So we're so lucky here. The Plan Altanga Inishmeon is the language kind of promotion office here in the island. And one of the very, very good things they do is they get a gari for us. They get a little field where we can go, people who've moved into the island, and learn from the true island experts about how to grow the Inishmeon potatoes. So we've been digging drills. We're putting down the seaweed. Gorgeous mix of fresh kind of red seaweeds brought up from the sea.
And to give it more sand. Of a salty kick.
Well, you do. You get a bit of a salty taste, but really it's a fantastic fertiliser for the soil. And because we don't have a lot of soil here, you know, the Aran Islands and the Burn famously have very, very little soil. To just give a little bit more soil so the potatoes have more room to grow, they get that extra taste and they just get a bit of a boost. So it's a nice kind of crop that you get a lot of potatoes for just a small patch of soil.
And John, if St. Patrick were here, he would probably remind us that it's the middle of Lent, which obviously many people observe. But for you, you mentioned Mehil earlier. Do you think that Lent is actually about giving up, or is this time of year, can we interpret it in another way?
You know, growing up, we used to always say you could give up something or take up something. And I think that it's a good time to reflect for the 40 days. And maybe it's taking up a positive thing for yourself. No point taking up smoking now, Lee. But taking up something positive that you'll see through that journey for the 40 days and go
Have
on.
Have you picked anything this year?
I'm kind of trying to stay away from the computer too much, and which is hard when you're a writer. But I remember one Lent I gave up meat and found that to be it was tough, but it was good. Offer it up. I think that regardless of whether you're religious or not, I think that there's good principles in these things that you can take them and arm yourself as we go forward. We all are living in tumultuous times. We don't know what's going to happen. Globally. I suppose, as Sean said, you go out your door and it's a beautiful day, but we don't know what's in front of us. So if we can have a little moment of reflection for ourselves, a little space for ourselves, and offering something or taking up something, I think is a wonderful way to feed that mehl of the spirit for yourself, an inner journey, you know. And I think, you know, life is all about inner journeys, you know. The Buddhists talk about the great journey in, you know. And I think it's something that that benefits us all so much. And when I was a kid, we used to say Jesus came out of the desert on Paddy's Day, so you get chocolate.
you do get that sort of interim break. I know that one of the things that is coming up for you is the book festival in Granard. And just on that journey, Sean, I know the Birdsong documentary is absolutely flying. It's going from strength to strength, and you're just back from the States, and actually the BBC broadcast earlier this week, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, it just keeps going and going, which is, you know, it's incredible, because it's a great vessel for the messages that you know, I want to spread, you know, to spread a love and awe for nature. It's had four screenings in the US now. The BBC have bought it. It's on Aer Lingus, I've been told. It's amazing. And just the responses that I've gotten from it to me are just so, you know, so heartwarming, because there's nothing I care more about than nature. Oh. And of course, Irish nature.
Congratulations on it, because it's a great promotion for all of us as well as yourself. And I'm sure you're enjoying being back for with a little bit of downtime back at home. But for now, I'm going to have to wish a happy St. Patrick's Day and lovely springtime to you all. John Connell here in studio, Sean Renane in Fota in Cork, and to Aideen Hearney on Inishmeon. And Aideen, I hope you enjoy Cad, if they let you play, or if you want to play on the island this St. Patrick's Day. But thank you all for joining us. Gura Mila, my agaf.